2, Rintoul and Sermon.
You know how you know the weather is good in April? And I know this doesn't affect everyone, Karen. You can tell me whether you're in this category or not. When I had to put on sunscreen yesterday, you know it's a good day in April.
Okay, so you do know it's a good day in April. I know, Scott, you hit the slopes yesterday. I decided to go find a middle of the field where I was not around anybody and sit have a picnic with my boyfriend. So he did not put on sunscreen yesterday. And so he comes to me in a boat.
I'm laughing because I've lived it.
Now, and Scott, like, you know, you're redhead. I'm sure your skin is fair. Like, you're probably prone to burning. My boyfriend and I are not. We're both prone to tanning. We get quite dark in the summer. And usually we've had, you know, a Mexican vacation to help us, you know, get that base come April. But he did not put sunscreen on yesterday. The tan line on his forearm, he's got a significant shirt tan line. But it's not, like, it is red. Like, he looked like he had been out in the Mexican sun without, like, that intense sun without sunscreen on yesterday. And I just laughed at him. I'm like, you actually just got a burn in April, only in Vancouver.
Like, the farmer's tan. He's got the farmer's tan.
It's terrible, yeah. I'm sure today it probably turned into, like, you know, nice brown color. But, yes, yesterday he looked like a tomato.
The farmer is what many people refer to Daryl Sutter as, the rancher, whatever it may be. I do want to talk about something Daryl Sutter did last night, not what he said last night. I was captivated by it. I don't know if I'm the only one. We will get to that later in the program. I promise you we will discuss it because I sent you the link and I said, you guys have to watch this. And It was awesome. I know that's a great tease. At least I think it's a great tease. We will get to it later in the program because we're going to turn our attention to talking about this compressed schedule idea. Mm-hmm. With what the Canucks are grappling with right now, it's a little different than what we've seen with other teams. And we've laid it out. You and I were on this last week talking about how teams like the Devils and the Sabres, 5-6 other NHL teams have gone through a stretch of 19-32 or 19-31 in and around there, like the Canucks mm-hmm. are being asked to play. The difference being they had more lead-up time, they had more practice time, and they didn't have as long a layoff. And that's really what's in question in Vancouver. But we've talked about this, and we've talked about the challenges that come with a compressed schedule. This doesn't just affect the National Hockey League. This is a big talking point in basketball mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's we're going to speak with Bobby Marks coming up here, former AGM executive with the Brooklyn Nets. Of course, he works for ESPN now, and his colleague put out a story about the fact that he talked to a bunch of number of general managers around the league and some coaching staffs and some athletic training staffers. And basically, they have said, like, this is the worst schedule, Scott, quote, worst schedule I have seen in 25 years in the league. It's utterly insane. They use the word brutal. They say the injury purposes of it, it's far worse than anything they saw in the Orlando bubble. Like, they are talking about how significant this compressed schedule is and worried about the health of their players. And some people, Scott, have been putting out there the fact that maybe Jamal Murray's injury is because of the fact his body was worn down a little bit because of this compressed schedule, which led to the torn ACL and him out for, you know, the foreseeable future. Like, this is a general concern, not just in the NHL, but in the NBA, putting the players at risk because the schedule is just absolutely insane for your body. Your body's not supposed to play this much.
We'll never know. We'll never know with Jamal Murray whether this was something that was inevitable, whether it had to do with increased taxation on his body, if you will. But let's bring Bobby Marks, ESPN insider, former Nets AGM, into the equation. Bobby, thank you very much for doing this today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. In Canada, we're talking a lot about the NHL compressed schedule, the health situation in Vancouver. It's the backdrop for all of this. As Karen just laid out, this is a big conversation point in the NBA right now. What's your view on what players are being asked to do this season in the National Basketball Association?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, I think Murray's injury is the fifth ACL we've had this year. When you take into account Jonathan Isaac of the Magic had torn his ACL in the bubble in Orlando, and 5 is a high number for players. And I think it's only going to probably get worse down the stretch here. I mean, we've got teams, I think Miami and Memphis are playing 8 games in 12 nights to make up for games that were lost because of COVID. There's a lot of stretches of games that teams are going to be playing, 3 and 4 nights, 4 and 5 nights here. I think the big concern too is that there's really no break for the players. You know, when you're asking them to play the night, you know, the night before, and then come in early in the morning to get your COVID test, and then you got to get another COVID test. That, you know, the morning is usually your kind of your period where you're getting your rest, and that's not happening. So, yeah, I think you're seeing it across, you know, with the NHL, and I think you're seeing it with the NBA, that we all kind of knew this was going to happen when you're trying to cram, you know, 72 games in a, you know, in a shortened time period here. And that's why you see teams like Brooklyn last night, you know, Kevin Durant is not going to play in a back-to-back, because for them, it doesn't, the seeding doesn't mean much, because they'll be a top three seed. But on the other end, you've got Dallas, who's fighting for the play-in spot. You've got other teams that are going to have to play their guys, you know, at 4 and 5 nights. So who knows where their bodies will be when we get to mid-May.
Bobby, one of your colleagues, Jackie Mack, of course, she was on one of a podcast and said, you know, she's talked to a few players this year, and it's not just the physical taxation, it's the mental taxation of being in this season. And it's even worse than what they had to experience in the bubble. They said actually the bubble was better. I mean, have you talked to some players just about how mentally this season has been draining on them, not just physically?
Yeah, and it's funny, and the bubble was taxing. You talk to a lot of executives here, and that was one thing they would not go back to, just because of the strain. And I just think the turnaround, you know, we got done playing in mid-October. We turned around, had the draft a month later than free agency, and then the season started right around Christmas time. I don't think anybody's been able to get a break from this. I mean, from players, executives, media, standpoint. I mean, I'm getting ready to write all my off-season articles, and I just wrote them in October, you know, or November. And when it is an extremely quick turnaround. And I just think that days are running into each other. And I think that's kind of where, you know, from a player's perspective and from, you know, from a team perspective, that there just has not been a break here. And we all kind of knew this is how it was going to be, but until you go through it, I don't think you can prepare for it.
Do you think there's any regret from the players in agreeing to, I know they kind of expected to maybe be starting in January, and it ended up starting in December, a little bit earlier than expected. But do you think there's some regret with how this season's gone down with the players, and how it's maybe not allowed it to go down, but how it has been allowed to go down?
Well, I think that if there's a regret, is that we let the Olympics play a big factor in as far as how this season was going to be condensed. And as far as I think it was fine starting in December, you know, 2 months after, you know, the finals ended in Orlando. But to have it, you know, basically go from December into regular season into mid-May, and then try to get everything done by mid-July when the Olympics start, I think there's probably some regret where, you know, maybe we spread that out. Maybe we go into August. Maybe we go into early September, right before college football and the NFL season starts. That would have been able to, you know, kind of spread out the games a little bit more. I understand there is a huge economic, you know, factor into that from a TV standpoint, you know, probably billions of dollars. So they looked at it in that regards also. But as I said, you know, it sounded good, or, you know, I would say, it sounded it was a workable solution when it was agreed upon in November, but until you go through it and you don't realize the rigors of it, you know, it's a challenge. And what happened in Orlando with the bubble is the bubble protected everybody. You know, everybody was kind of under the same roof. You know, all the protocols were there. They had the COVID testing there. You just went downstairs and we went back to your room. Where, you know, here it's been more of a challenge.
Bobby Marks, ESPN Insider, former Nets AGM, joining us here on Rintoul and Sermon. The NBA has been more proactive than many other leagues in terms of resting its players for years, giving guys games off, and there have been some pretty high-profile incidents over the years, San Antonio maybe being at the forefront of that. As a former executive, how did you look at that with the schedule? Like, what number of games were acceptable to you to deem schedule losses, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think more how we looked at the schedule is we let our sports science department really kind of dictate as far as what the workload is going to be. And it's so much more advanced now than maybe it was, you know, 10 or 11 years ago, where guys are monitored. They've got tracking devices. You can kind of look at what the computer says from, how their bodies are handling it. And that's, that's kind of, you're relying less on how your coaches feel, but more on your medical department. And if the medical department in Brooklyn or sports science says Kevin Durant workload is, 30 minutes every 48 hours, then Kevin Durant's not playing on back to back. Doesn't matter if we're playing Philadelphia for first place in the Eastern Conference. So, I understand there is a relationship from a TV standpoint because of they pay most of the bills here, either ESPN or TNT here. But if you're in the front office, you're looking out for the best interest of your organization and the best interest of your health. And as I always say, the goal is always to get to, now it's mid-May in one piece. If Kevin Durant, blows his hamstring out last night, it doesn't matter to me or you, but it matters a lot to Brooklyn. So, I think it's a matter of, as I said, just relying as far as what your trainers and your doctors are saying.
And when I see a guy like Luka Doncic, I want to see him close to 100%. I don't want to see him at 60%, 70%.
Well, I said that yesterday. I said from a media and fan perspective, I want these guys out there. Like, I want them out. I wanted KD out last on the floor last night. But I've been there. I've been in the front office before. And as you said, like, I don't care what ESPN or TNT thinks of it. I care what how it impacts my team and my organization.
No question. And I guess what I was getting to is I don't want to see a shadow of a great player. I want to see a great player close to his best and close to his rested best. Man, Doncic does it again last night. We're always looking for comparables. And like Patrick Mahomes in the NFL, Bobby, there's nothing quite like him that's ever come around before. What's the comp for Doncic? Is there one?
I don't think there is. I don't think it is. And it's funny, I heard somebody said this morning that it was luck. The shot was luck. No, he practices that. Those shots are practiced in shoot around or before the game. He is a special player. It's amazing he's only in year three. There's probably he hasn't hit the ceiling yet, and there's probably a lot more to come. But he's must watch every night because his team is going to be in it when he's on the floor. And it will be a shame if they get in, if they're one of those teams in that play-in tournament, because I want to see him in a best of seven first round series, guaranteed no matter what.
Yeah, I know Luke has actually been one of the ones to be vocal about the point that he doesn't want there to be a play-in series with his Mavs currently in that seventh spot. I want to stick with the Western Conference, Bobby, because take a look at the LA Lakers. They're currently fifth in the standings. They've fallen down, of course, without Anthony Davis and LeBron James. They could fall a little bit more. Right now, they're scheduled to, if the playoffs start today, face the Denver Nuggets. But how are you feeling if you're one of those top four teams and you're thinking, come on, man, like, we got to play the Lakers with Anthony Davis and LeBron James coming back healthy? Like, they're supposed to be one of the top seeds, not one of the bottom seeds.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of, how would you feel if you were Utah or Phoenix, and somehow they fell to the play, to that seven seed? I mean, goodness gracious. I think that's just kind of the nature of the beast. I think for the Lakers, I think seeding really doesn't matter. It's another one of those teams that we kind of know what we have when we're healthy. Get LeBron and AD back healthy when we get going in mid-May. I don't see them falling out of the top six here. But on the other end, you get to six, you could be looking at the Clippers. If you're at five, you could be looking at Denver. So any of those top six in a first round matchup is going to be extremely tough, just based on that team coming off a championship, and if they're healthy, if they're the sixth seed, they'll probably still be the team to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes in the come on man situation. The Phoenix Suns are 9-1 in their last 10 games. They've won three in a row. Chris Paul is having kind of a renaissance season down there in Phoenix. So, what have you seen from this team, and are they legitimate contenders to come out of the Western Conference?
They should. I mean, everyone's going to be saying it's youth. I know Chris has played in a lot of big games before. Certainly Jay Crowder has. And the people will point to Devin Booker and DeAndre and Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, young players who have never been in a playoff series before. I'm buying into where Phoenix is. I think the way that Chris has played, Devin Booker's, we can put him up there for one of these guys we're talking about, MVP standpoint. They've got a really good coach in Monty Williams. Their bench is really good. You know, a mix of veterans with Dario Saric and Etuan Moore, Langston Galloway, you know, coming off the bench here. They're deep. They're 9 or 10 deep here. So, yeah, I'm buying into Phoenix. I mean, when you look at the difference in conferences, and I know the top three in the East are really strong, but the West, I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, there are 6 or 7 teams that could potentially get out of the West.
What are your feelings on the Portland Trail Blazers, who we always like as one of those plucky teams going in, but we don't ever see as that top tier team? Are they better positioned to make a deep run this season?
You know what? I had Portland before, right after the draft, free agency, and I went on national TV and I said they're the second best team in the Western Conference. They're making me look good right now, and I liked how they were positioned with their depth and what they did in the offseason. I just have a hard time of them stopping anybody on the defensive end. They give up a lot of points. You know, they're back to basically full strength here. They'll be a tough out, but, you know, they might be another one of these teams in that 6 to 7 range. They might be a team that faces the Clippers in the first round, and that'll be extremely hard. But yeah, they've got to get stops when the game matters, and they haven't been able to do that.
They faced Denver last year in the bubble, and obviously Jamal Murray came to another level. We started this interview talking about injuries and Jamal Murray being the prominent one that's on everybody's mind right now. Where was he at in terms of his ascension to superstar within the tiers that we always throw out there within this game?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not quite there yet. I mean, I think he still probably wanted a little more body of work, but yeah, I mean, he's probably, you know, right to that tier of all-star level player. I mean, he's the second best player on a team that's gone to a Western Conference Finals and, you know, was 35-19 when he went down with that injury. And it's a devastating injury for them just based on, you know, with how Jokic has played this year and, you know, certainly an MVP type level. And then, you know, it's not like he'll just miss the playoffs. I mean, this is going to go into next year and you probably won't see him back till around the trade deadline in February here. So, we've seen guys come back from it, but from where he was playing right now, it's a devastating injury.
Bobby, I'm not sure who you have as a favorite coming out of the Eastern Conference. Of course, Philly is leading right now, followed by Brooklyn and Milwaukee. And surprisingly, Atlanta Hawks are now fourth in the Eastern Conference. But looking specifically at this Philly team, I guess there's been a lot of disappointment with that team leading up to this season. Do they have what it takes to get out of the East this year?
They do. I mean, if Embiid is healthy and he looks like he's in good condition, another guy we'll talk about MVP-wise, I think they've done a good job surrounding him with shooters. When you look at Seth Curry and, Danny Green, both guys they got in the offseason, certainly Ben on the defensive end and Ben Simmons, Doc Rivers. Yeah, I know the track record is not great when we get to playoffs as far as him getting to a conference finals, and yes, he's won a championship in Boston, but in previous years here. But I do think they have the right pieces. Tobias Harris has played really well, kind of as that third guy. They do have the right pieces to match up well against Brooklyn, to match up well against Milwaukee, the teams that are in that top three.
We're in that stretch drive right now, and I think most of us as Hoops fans are just at that point where we want to see the playoffs. I don't know if you consider yourself in that group, but I feel like I'm there right now. Let's go.
Get me to mid-May. That's right. Get me to mid-May. You know, I want everyone healthy and let this thing go when the play-in starts, and I think on May 18th.
Amen to that. Hey, Bobby, thank you very much for doing this today. Continued health and safety to you and yours, and I hope we can do this again soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That is Bobby Marks, ESPN Insider. A lot of different things to hit there. And at the forefront of our conversation, the one that we'll come back to, we'll get there in a minute, but the one about the Canucks and injuries and compressed schedule, all of it.
Can I just say, maybe I have to take the L. Maybe I do, Scott. I don't like having to say that, but okay. I did throw kind of Trae Young under the bus saying, you know, can he be that guy to make his team better? And he's somehow managed to get the Atlanta Hawks into the fourth seed in the East. I understand it's not as depth or deep of a conference as the Western Conference, but I had no idea that the Atlanta Hawks were fourth in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and he's having a very good year. He's going to do it differently, obviously, than Luka Doncic. And he's going to do it in more of a Steph Curry fashion when he does it, right? He's going to shoot from all over the court. He's a slight guy. The comparison there is obvious. And he just might not end up being the showman that either of the two players I mentioned are. Like, Curry's a showman. I think Trae Young has some of that in him. But Doncic, man, like, he just shows up. He does unorthodox things. He still doesn't look like he's quite grown into what his body's going to be when he's at his best.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a little out of shape, you know? I mean, I guess what Bobby said, how old is he now? He's only 22 years old. Like, I guess there's still a little, you know, figuring out the physical aspects of his body. But yeah, he kind of, he doesn't exactly look like an elite athlete in the NBA, that's for sure.
I like that you're teasing the segment that's coming up, though. We do it usually on Wednesdays, but because we had a displaced show between the two markets yesterday, we wanted everybody involved in this. Take the L is coming up next segment. You got something that needs to take the L? You got somebody who needs to take the L? You can send those submissions in 960, 960, 650, 650. I think I know where a lot of them are going to get directed, and I'm interested to see if people hit the right mark on it, because what Emily Kaplan said an hour ago to me is very, very true. I know who people are going to take aim at. I don't think it's that simple when it comes to the game that most people talk about on a regular basis in this country. Are you in agreement? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I think it's a lot more complicated than just let's blame this person, let's blame that person.
Speaking of complicated, I already know who's taking the L for me, and it's not a place I wanted to assign the L. Plus, we've got a rant that you either agree with or you vehemently do not. We will play it for you next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Take the L coming up this segment. I can give you a situation where I've taken many L's over the years, and I find out pretty quickly whether or not I take the L. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Yeah. What is your policy on expiration dates with food or liquid?
It depends what it is. It depends what it is, Scotty. Personally, if it's something like milk,
yes,
I actually probably don't even drink it on its expiration date. Like, I'm kind of like a day before expiration date. If it's something like, you know, like Caesar salad dressing, I mean, it takes a long time to expire. So I figure, you know, because it does take a long time to expire and probably a couple of days after, you need to smell it first, make sure. What did you just eat or almost eat on expiration
dates? It didn't happen now, but I thought about it the other day, and I'm kind of going through it with my milk situation at home right now. Uh-oh. And I don't know where our listeners are at on this, but this is one area of my life, Karen, where I have not evolved from university. Like most areas of my life, I feel like I'm a better person now. I'm more educated, more life experience, and that I've made improvements in my life from those days. Not with food expiration. Nope. I'm the same person. And, for example, what you just said about expiration on milk, my wife is very much the same way. If she sees the date on there, and, like, today's April 15th, if it says April 12th, she'll be like, no, that's done.
Oh, that's way too old.
I will open it, smell it, and in most cases, taste it. So I will take the L right there if I am wrong on it.
No.
Because, hey, Karen, most things like milk, they last a little longer than the actual expiration date. You know this as well as I do.
I would suggest milk is the one that doesn't last past this expiration date. And you know what? I don't want to be that person that opens it and gets a whiff of that sour milk, because that's probably going to make me gag and want to have to run to the bathroom. So I'm not willing to take that chance, Scott, with it, or take the chance that, you know, you're dumping it out and it's already kind of, you know, solidified. And
yeah, that's a problem. Like, if it looks like cottage cheese, you've got an issue. Yeah, if you've got cottage cheese in your milk carton, you've got an issue there. So that's one where I've taken the L many times. And yes, like in my university days, I will see week-old food that we've made whatever meal from, and generally I'll taste it. Like, there's unless I see something growing on it, Karen, I'll look at it and I'll go, yeah, that's probably fine. And I'll find out the hard way that I'm wrong.
I have a question for you on your expiration of food that's been left out.
Okay.
Like pizza. Like, let's talk about pizza. Like, if you leave it out, you know, you've had some pizza on a Saturday night and whatever, you go to bed, you forget to put it in the fridge. Is it okay to eat you know, on a Sunday morning or even maybe like a Monday morning.
Yeah, pizza's impervious to breaking down. Of course it is. Yeah, it's fine.
The reason I say this is because one of our friends and former coworkers, Ian McCletchie, was infamous for this. You know, there'd be like the Friday where you go to work and the boss has brought in pizzas for lunch or pizza for the evening crew that was doing the game that night, right? So, and then on the weekends, it's kind of a skeleton crew, Scott, you know, and maybe the entire cleaning staff hasn't come through. So they leave it out there just because they don't know when it was put there, right? So Clutch was very famous for Monday morning, like pizza you saw Friday when you left, and he would come in on Monday, and if you still saw it on the counter, it's like, no, it's good. There's nothing grown on it. It's good to go.
Yeah, it's impervious to breakdown.
No.
It does not degrade. Yeah, pizza's fine. Pizza's in a class of its own. I'm with Clutch on this one. Someone texting in, milk in the door of the fridge is warmer. It doesn't last as long. It's definitely 100% smell, swirl, taste test
in
is necessary. Says this texter, agrees with me that you can't just look at the date. You got to go with the taste test on this one. I'll tell you what I am worst at. Milk is not the one I am worst at. Wine is what I'm worst at.
Okay.
You have some wine. If there's some left over, to which some of our texters will say, hey, what are you not finishing a bottle of wine? Like,
that's,
who's that?
That's basically what I'm going to say.
Hey, sometimes that happens, okay? So you've got wine left over. Maybe the next day you don't go back to the bottle of wine. Maybe you're having a little different beverage, or maybe it's just not a wine day. Whatever you're doing, red wine, I'm terrible at that. Like, I will have red wine well beyond the point where it should not be consumed because I've never learned to properly evaluate wine. And my wife will go, what are you drinking that for? Like, that is bad. Pour that out. Open a new bottle. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, like, you don't get the whole vinegary aspect of it, Scott. You know, like, where the vinegar is settled once you open the bottle of wine. I mean, there's something to be said about aging wine, Scott, but that's when the bottle's closed, not when it's been open already. I'm in the category of, generally speaking, that the bottle of wine does not tend to be left with anything left in it after it's once open. There were at least two people in my household that enjoy drinking red wine, so that's a good thing. I would say I think you're probably good on 2 or 3 days, Scott, if it's been closed up and sealed properly again. Either you put like a new stopper in it or put the cap back on. But if there has been no lid put on it, like 3 days, you're good. Like, that's it.
I'm responsible enough to put a lid on it, but I just sometimes forget when that bottle was opened, and I find out the most difficult way sometimes. But usually, again, I'm like, wow, this is drinkable. And my wife will say the exact opposite. Tim in Grand Prairie says expiry dates are overrated. Like, take milk. If it smells okay, drink away. We have another one from Ian in Victoria. Expiry dates are a liability date, not a medical date. He's on
my
side.
Not on sushi, though. That is one where you have to either you eat it right away or it's done. Kristen Wonok says, my brother-in-law ate sushi that was left out in a warm trailer for a few hours and paid the price. Yeah, I would suggest even, that's one of those things, unless it's fresh, Scotty, I don't even think like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour left open. Like, the sushi immediately or no.
Kelly Rudy says, open old red wine is horrible.
Yes.
He agrees with you on that. Stewie from Richmond says, I've seen pictures of McDonald's hamburgers that are 10 years old. It looks pretty much like a 3-day-old burger. Would you taste test that burger? I think that is beyond me, Stewie. I would not go down that road. No, I would not.
I think that says something about the hamburgers at McDonald's if they are 10 years old and they still look the same. Fried chicken, apparently, Scott,
yes,
is in the same category as pizza, impervious to deterioration.
I agree.
I'll have to take your word on it. I'm not a huge fried chicken fan. Maybe like a little KFC or a little, what do we have out here? We have, I forget what the famous one out here is, but still I'm not exactly a fried chicken connoisseur, so I'll take your word for that one.
BP and Mission on your track. Someone just asked me how much I usually spend on a bottle of wine. I said about 30 minutes. That's a pretty good text that comes in today. That's pretty solid. If you want in on this, yeah. It comes up in my household every once in a while, and I am the garburator, if you will. It's Scott Rintoul. It is Karen Sermon. It's time for Take the L in just a couple minutes' time. I think this is the perfect rant to get us into Take the L today.
Okay.
You heard Bobby Marks earlier this hour talking about frustration that fans may have, that media may have at times, when prominent players sit out. This is a conversation we have in hockey, and it's viewed much differently in hockey than it is in the National Basketball Association. We've come to expect rest days, game management, rest management, whatever you want to call it. Kevin Durant, a bunch of Brooklyn Nets, sat out last night. this is common practice. But Chris Mad Dog Russo was having none of it apparently yesterday and lost it when he saw the game sheet and who was going to be playing for the Brooklyn Nets. Have a listen.
Let's go tell Pat Riley. Hey, Pat, no Ewing tonight. I know you're playing the Bulls and Jordan, but Ewing's going to pass because his knees are sore. Ewing, who played every night when he was freaking, I was there many a night in many a locker room when Ewing had to freaking ice his knees. Talk to the media. Every game, sit in front of that locker room. Every game. Sat there with his ice on his knees, and he played night after night after night after night. Played his ass off. Night after night. You think, I tell you something right now. Ewing wanted to play. How about Krause telling Jordan somewhere in the 98 season when Pippen decided to take a pass with that late surgery, as we all saw there in the documentary. How about Krause telling Mike, you know, Mike, Sacramento's, no, we're in Sacramento tonight. You know, you played last night. You know, let's take a blow. You know what Jordan would do? You know what Jordan would do? My God almighty! You couldn't rip that uniform off him! That's basketball! That's what he would do. He'd freaking play! How about Paul Silas? How about Havlicek? How about Havlicek? Ran 8 miles every game. Havel played from 1963 to 1979. 16 freaking years. Every single game. You think Havlicek's taking a night off? Havlicek! Twice the player that any of these guys are. You know how great Havlicek was? It makes me sick. And you guys rip Cousy. You know how many games Cousy played? You know, he taking trades to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and run into the ball game because the trade is late and they played the night before in Boston. And he go out there and play 45 minutes. How about freaking Durant say, you know what, I'm playing. Get the hell out of here. You know, Durant, instead of fighting Michael Rappaport, how about Durant tell freaking Nash and his freaking owner who's paying him $40 million and the GM Marks who's a freaking out of the Popovich school, how about Durant just say, give me the goddamn uniform. I'm playing tonight.
Okay, Boomer. Honestly, okay, Boomer. This is what guys did in the 60s. This is what guys did in the 80s. This is what they should be doing now.
Like, this is what guys did, Scott, that smoked cigarettes before games or cigars before games and went on the court and played. Like, that is such an old man rant if I've ever heard one. Oh, back in the day when I walked uphill, you know, the kids these days. It's such, like, the fact that he is so impassioned over Kevin Durant sitting out a game, coming back from an injury, you know, and being on time management. Like, it is so just old man. And I have to give him the L in this one. This is not my take the L, but I'm going to give it to him. Because, Scott, like, how tone deaf is it as it comes out? This rant comes on the exact same day that GMs are talking about the fact that players are getting injured because of this COVID condensed schedule. Like, it's so tone deaf from him. It's, I mean, it's epic in its own right, but it's so just, like you said,
night
okay,
after night after night after night.
We had what was the conversation yesterday about Jamal Murray? What was it? Why was he still in the game? Like, why was he out there still playing? And now you've got someone saying they need to be in the lineup every single night, playing hard minutes. Michael Jordan did it. Bob Cousy did it. Why not these guys? Also, I'm not sure why you're taking aim at Kevin Durant, who put his career on the line to go out there in the NBA Finals against better judgment, against medical advice, to try to help his team win a championship against the Toronto Raptors, and it cost him a season of his career. It didn't cost him financially, Karen, but he wasn't able to play because he blew out his Achilles against better advice.
Hey, guess what? You know what we have now? You know, 40, 30 years later, Scott? Better technology, better science, better knowledge of what your body should and shouldn't go through. This is no longer the 60s and 70s. Information is more prevalent. We know what can happen to your bodies.
And I knew this text would come in, and I understand that there's a faction of people who feel this way. I agree. If you're making $40 million a year, play the damn game. Okay. Then I also don't want to hear these people say, well, the most important time of the year is the playoffs. You better be in peak physical condition, ready to go. This is self-serving in North American society because we devalue regular season. We do. It only matters if you win championships in the NBA. It only matters if you win playoff games in the NHL. Doesn't matter if you put up points. Who cares? President's Trophy. What a joke. Go get me some playoff wins. You know when people would be better poised and positioned to get playoff wins? If they were rested and ready
and healthy
to go. I understand if you are buying a ticket for a game, you want to see the best people. I get it. I understand that. But when you buy a ticket to a sporting event, do you know what you're getting? Do you know what you're obligated to get? Legitimate competition. You don't deserve to see Ovechkin play 27 minutes. You'd like that, but that's not what you're entitled to, Karen. When you purchase a ticket to a movie, you're not entitled to an Oscar winner. You go in hoping to see something great, and if you don't like it, maybe you leave. But you don't go back and say, ah, I can't believe they didn't cast so-and-so as the supporting actor in this role. That's garbage. I need a better cast. You take your chances with entertainment.
Here's the thing, Scott, and I'm with you on that. Do you think anybody who is a Toronto Raptors fan is thinking, oh, I went to a game and didn't see Kawhi Leonard in the regular season, so I want to trade in my championship parade and to see them hoist the trophy because I didn't see Kawhi in a load management? Guess what? Load management and resting him got you the NBA title.
And this is all wrapped up in a bigger conversation. Like, we have a text coming in. Limit a player's minutes. Don't just sit out. It's a fair take. Here's the problem. We've gotten to a point with most of these sports where there are so many regular season games and additional playoff rounds now that it's too much. So I can get you Kevin Durant for every game in a year. All we got to do is take 15 games off the regular season schedule. That's all we got to do. And you know what? The players at the top end of the food chain would do that in a heartbeat. Do you remember the last NFL CBA? What was the fight over mostly? Are we going to play a 17th game?
Yep.
And you had the prominent players saying, don't do it. And the rest of the lower middle class and lower class, as far as pay structure goes in the NFL, saying, I can't afford to do that, guys. If I get another game check here, I'm signing up for it. Hey. You want players available every single game and at their best, limit the number of games. Owners aren't going to do that. The majority of players aren't going to do that as well. So those who can do this, like, you know, the old Jim Rome take, I take a lot of vacation days because I get a lot of vacation days. Same thing goes for stars.
I'm actually very shocked, Scott, because we saw like the conversation about, and maybe this is because it's not about COVID, but we saw, you know, people, they're basically on JT Miller's side when it comes to what he's saying, not being ready, shouldn't play, blah, blah, blah. And then when it comes to this, Kevin Durant, on the basis of his athletic trainer and science telling him it's better if you don't sit out for the health of you long term, like most of our inbox is saying, no, these players should play. Chris and Langley, NBA players are prima donnas now, beyond soft. They should be embarrassed. This unsigned text coming in, wall, cry me a river for these athletes. Like, I'm actually pretty shocked that our listening audience is on this side, because I'm on the side of the health of the players. So,
as am I. And this gets to a different part, because there is an entitlement, I believe, from sports fans now, but they want everything. They want everything. If it's not a championship team, blow it up. It's not just about simple entertainment anymore. I understand that if Ovechkin comes to your arena once a year, you want to see him. I get it. But now, if Alexander Ovechkin's getting paid by the Washington Capitals, does he have a greater obligation to play in Calgary or Vancouver the one time, or to suit up every single home game for the fans that are coming as season ticket holders? Branko in Grand Prairie, Alberta says, if they're sitting out, then just post it before I buy tickets. Then I will take a pass also. There is risk assumed with buying a ticket, because generally for these premium games, you're going to have to buy in advance and you're going to have to take your chances.
Now, the NBA, Scott, it did make a rule, because remember the Greg Popovich rule? Like, he's the one who basically started this, Pop, back in the day. It wasn't that the guys were injured. It was he's just going to rest his guys, and they didn't have to go on the injury report. He was just not going to play them. So that's where it started.
So it didn't start there, Karen, but he made an emphatic point about it, because players were resting before that. But what he did to shove his middle finger at the NBA was, I'm sending them home. Because guys would show up to games and then they would just happen to rest that night, or they'd play very limited minutes. Popovich took his most prominent players, because the schedule was so difficult at the time, and he sent them back to San Antonio. And here's the crazy part. It was Miami Heat fans that were complaining, and it was a San Antonio Spurs team that was labeled as boring but Popovich sent Tim Duncan and company home. People in Miami complained when this was a LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh-less team. Like, who are you actually sewing up? And it turned out to be a one-point game. Like, even without those stars that San Antonio had, it ended up being a hell of a basketball game, which is what you buy a ticket for.
Exactly. So, but because of the fact that there was, you know, we're not going to play our star players tonight. We're going to rest them because we do need them in the playoffs. I mean, Adam Silver did put in the whole, you can't just rest players. And if you're not going to play players, especially, Scott, when it comes to nationally televised games, you have to put them on an injury report. Like, they just can't rest. They have to be injured. So I will say that maybe some teams are using a little bit of, they're trying to skirt that issue maybe. Now, do I think Kevin Durant has been hurt? Yes. Do I think he has a hamstring issue? Yes. Do I think playing too many minutes is going to exasperate that issue? Yes. So I think he was injured. Do I think teams maybe rest players and use injury as an issue? I do agree with that too. But when it comes to this specific rant that we're talking about from Mad Dog and the fact Kevin Durant, like, why him? He is actually coming back from an injury. Like, this is about the health of him. I don't know why he chose right now for this to be the hill that he's going to die on.
Heath in Calgary says, something tells me the consensus will be the opposite of what you two are saying with this topic. Get out there, do your job, earn your millions of dollars. I understand the point, Heath, and you're right. We might be in the minority on this one. Here's the flip side. So, Heath, I don't know what team you cheer for. Because you're texting from Calgary, I'm going to assume it's the Flames. Does that mean that Jacob Markstrom is obligated to play every game? Is that what that means? Well, no, because we got to give goalies a certain amount of rest, and yep, we want them to perform at their best, and we know what it says about back-to-backs. And let's say, in the scenario I'm painting for you, Heath, that the Flames have clinched a playoff spot. I know it's a different world than we're relying on right now, but let's say they've clinched a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
Does Jacob Markstrom have to play all the games down the stretch because he's earning millions of dollars and he might be in an opposing arena where fans are paying to see him?
You probably don't want him to, because that could limit how effective he is in the playoffs. He could be tired. Scott, he could be tired. This text comes in to 650-650. Time management, whatever. I go and watch live sports events for the love of the sport, not for the big stars. Added bonus if they are in.
Time management,
one way of looking at it,
hasn't been my strong suit in this segment, but it is time for Take the L. Let's get to it.
Sometimes you just need to admit defeat and move on.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try.
Loser! You're a loser! Are you feeling sorry for yourself? Well, you should be, because you are dirt!
Here's who needs to take the L.
Karen, would you like to go first? Would you like to suggest,
sure,
someone takes an L here? I know some of our listeners are suggesting we take the L.
Yes, there's a lot of listeners suggesting that about us right now. But I'm going to give this, I'm going a little off the board, Scott, and I'm going to suggest that Benoit Paire take the L. And many of our listeners might go, who? Well, Benoit Paire, he's a professional tennis player, plays on the ATP Tour. He's French, and he's played there for, he's a veteran, shall we say, on the tour. So he's been around the block, and he's known for speaking his mind, you could say, like a JT Miller did yesterday, but in a different sense. So he had this quote on April 11th ahead of the Monte Carlo Masters 1000 event that's taking place in Monte Carlo, clay court season. He said, honestly, I don't give a bleep about this match. Playing in a cemetery like this, it's just not possible anymore. All the players think it. I am perhaps the only one to say it. Tennis is no longer bringing me anything good. I've got no more spark. Now, I'm not giving him the L because of what he said. Well, I am a little bit. Here's the thing, Scott. These remarks come off a tournament where he basically embarrassed the sport and embarrassed himself. He was in Mexico playing Tsitsipas, top player there, and he basically just gave the match away. He's like, I don't want to be here. I'm just going to lob the ball back. I'm not going to hit serves. I'm going to hit him straight to the net. I just don't care. I'm done. I don't want to play. He says these comments, and this is not new to them, though. Like, they've been playing with no fans. Like, this is not new to sports in a pandemic. I understand the fact it sucks, but here's the thing. It's called motivate. You have to get your own motivation to go out there and play. And if he doesn't want to play, you know what? Take the L, leave, go. There's a lot of young players that are willing to take that paycheck in a time where they probably need this paycheck to go out there and play. So take the L, Benoit. This is not the time to be complaining about no fans in the stands.
It's not. You're right on that. And if he doesn't want to be out there and feels he's obligated to, then somebody on his team needs to talk to him and say, look, man, maybe you don't need the money this badly. If you're in that bad of a spot, let's get you mentally in the right place. I have said earlier in the show that I don't think it'll happen. But if you wanted to, if they get through these talks today with the NHLPA and the National Hockey League, if you wanted to, if you were the Vancouver Canucks, you could make a mockery of tomorrow night's game against the Oilers. I don't think that game's going to be played now. I do think that cooler heads are going to prevail and people will adapt to what the Canucks have said over the last 24 hours. Look, our bodies aren't ready. Like, we know we signed up for 19 games in 31 days, and it's not that we're not willing to do that. We just don't have enough time to prepare. Mm-hmm. If the NHL, quote-unquote, forced, because this isn't conscription, we're not talking about military service right now, if they were forced to play tomorrow night, I don't think they would do this, but it's a tactic they could use. All right, let's make a mockery of this game then. Let's show you what this looks like, because we're not going to put ourselves in harm's way. Do you know who I'm going to take the L to? Here's who needs to take the L. I don't know if it's the person who signed off on this or if it's the Bay. Yes, the store. Why am I bringing the store into this?
Because Hudson's Bay, really?
Hudson's Bay designs the outfits for our Olympians. And what do we want when we see our Olympic athletes at the ceremonies or on podiums? Do you know what we want to see? We want to see a proud-looking group. Have you seen what is being presented as our team kit for Team Canada this summer?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure someone from East Van, some hipster, designed this because this is hideous.
One of the jackets looks like a cross between the Michael Jackson from Thriller video jacket and something worn by Mace in one of his videos back in the day.
It looks like
a cross between the two. It kind of looks pleathery. I don't know. I know it's not that material, but that might even be the better jacket option here to the denim jacket that our athletes are supposed to roll out there in. Like, seriously, are we going to just be mocked on an international stage? I am not down with a Team Canada kit. I'm usually the last person to weigh in on fashion items, Karen, but this is no good. Somebody needs to redesign this. This is not a good look
for our
country.
Okay, Boomer. To throw your own line at you, Scotty.
You think this is a good look
Greg?
For our country,
Greg? I think it's a closing ceremony outfit. Who cares? Let's have some fun. Let's be creative for once, Scotty. Okay, Boomer. I'm going to stick with that.
Yeah, the spray-painted jean jacket with Canada on it.
Again, who cares? Let's get wild. Let's get crazy. What's holding you back? What would you rather see them wear? Let's come up with some different ideas if you're so against the denim.
Something classy? Something that I want to go buy?
Yes! Exactly, Karen.
How many closing ceremony outfits have you bought in the years and years and years that they've been doing it? Zero!
That's
who's buying
the
these
point.
Things?
That's beyond the point. I want the option of myself.
You've never done it before, I'm sure. Why would you do it now?
Yeah, Greg, what I really want is our athletes who are representing our country on an international stage to look like they forgot there was something that was supposed to happen that night and go, oh my God, I'll grab my jean jacket and get down there because I have nothing else in my closet. That's what I want us to look like. Yeah, that's fun.
It's our brand.
Someone just said it looks good, man, and texted and called us boomers. Yeah, just like Greg did. I'm sorry. That does not look good. It looks like someone just spray painted some random stuff on a denim jacket. I was like, okay, here you go. Someone was bored one day, so I'm like, let's spray paint something on a denim jacket. It looks terrible. It looks terrible.
Anthony agrees. He says, please stop with the jean jacket. It's horrible. Team USA, it looks so cool, modern, and simple. Greg is telling me to take the L. Maybe you will as well. Karen and I submitted our picks. Send yours in, 960-960 or 650-650. We've had a lot of commentary over these first 3 hours on the Canucks situation, JT Miller, all of it. We want to filter your comments into our next hour. We got notes and quotes coming your way as well. That's next on Rental and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Who knew that Olympic wear was going to be the most polarizing topic of the day? It's not quite there, but it's up there, Karen.
I like our. I'm liking our listeners in Calgary, because I think they agree with us. They're like, wow, that's 90s bad fashion. That's from Matt and Cochran. Like, can you... This is literally something, Scott. Yes. Think of, like, New Kids on the Block. Like, Joey. Like, wait, repping this, like, jean jacket with it. And maybe, like, back then, it would have been like, okay, he's wearing it, so I want to wear it thing. But this is, like, it's a terrible look. Absolutely terrible look. It looks like graffiti, which is what it is, for our national athletes on one of the biggest stages to be walking around that Olympics, you know, circle closing ceremonies, and that's what we want our athletes to wear? Come on, ma'am. Come on, ma'am.
Greg is trying to subtext on our text message inbox and validate his opinion, because Greg is saying, I just don't like it because I couldn't pull the look off. Yeah, it's really tough to pull off the jean jacket look. That's one thing people say. Well, you know what? You don't look good in a jean jacket. Who could pull off that look? This one, okay, I will give this text credit. I believe it comes from Rager. Just like you guys said to Mad Dog, okay, boomers, it looks good, man. Rager goes on to say, if they came up with some streamlined run-of-the-mill look, you guys wouldn't have talked about it. People wouldn't buy them. This is making you guys talk about it. It brings attention to it, and maybe now people will go out and buy these as collector's items. It's a genius move by the designers. Rager's going with the it's so bad, it's good take.
Well, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, because yes, probably we would have not talked about it and got this much response, Scott, if it was not so hideous and ugly. And, you know, maybe, yeah, you put it in your closet and it's one of those, you know, ugly third jerseys, Scott, that you bought back in the day that you're never going to wear again, like that Team North American jersey or whatever the case may be. But I just, when you're on the biggest stage, Scott, you know, millions and millions of eyes on you, and this is how you want our country represented? This is how you want us to look? Come on. Hudson Bay can do better. I've seen them do better.
Yes. Yes. And yes, Karen, you are 100% correct here. Keep those texts coming in. We got a lot of different things to get into. A lot of people have wanted to comment on the, do the Stars have to play every game? It is a much different attitude in the National Hockey League than it is in the National Basketball Association. I know that frustrates some fans. And look, I can empathize with the person who's purchased a ticket, wants to see their favorite player, or, hey, I can only go to one game a year. But buying your ticket doesn't guarantee you get to see a specific player. It's what you want. It's what you hope for. You feel good degree of certainty-wise when you do it. It doesn't mean you're entitled to that. And we have a number of texts coming in on this as well, Karen.
Yeah, and I have the understanding. I do. Like, I do get, you know, it's not cheap, Scott, to go to an NHL game. It's not cheap to go to an NBA game. And when you think maybe that LeBron James is... I guess he's a bad example because LeBron James plays every single game unless he's excessively injured. So I won't use that. But I guess, okay, Kevin Durant's going to come in and going to play. It's the only time you're going to see him. And, you know, you've got your kid and you buy some tickets to go see him. And he's excited. And they find out Kevin Durant is not going to play. But again, it's a risk you take. Kevin Durant could hurt himself in the first minute of the game. You're not going to see him anyways. I mean, that's a risk you take as well. So there is risks when it comes to purchasing these things. You're still going to see pretty world-class athletes in general play the sport. So I guess it's more of a fact, just enjoy that aspect of it. But I do sympathize. I'm not on the same side of it, but I do sympathize with the people that say, if I bought my ticket, I paid this money, I want to see the best players. I do understand that argument. It's just, I don't agree with it.
It's the difference between want and entitled to. That's what we're talking about here. Of course you want to see the best. Yes, who doesn't? Are you entitled to that? This one comes in, players can't have it both ways. Either A, they are the product and play the games, or B, the team and the league's the product. Stop selling yourselves as the product who deserve all the cash and leave more for the owners. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Why are we arguing that owners deserve more money? I don't understand that. I really don't understand that when the vast majority of us are labor. Like, most of us are the workers. Whatever job you're at, is that your argument when you go on a daily basis? You know what? More money for the guy who employs me. That's what I'm here for, as opposed to me.
I don't think Jerry Jones needs more money in his pockets, and I don't think the players think that way either. I think, generally speaking, you should be on the side of the players in this one.
This text comes in. Most people have a frame of reference where you just show up for work. athletes have to show up and compete at a world-class level. And that's where the sports science has taken this. And as I mentioned, you can have this. You could have athletes play every single game, cut down the regular season games. Yet both parties will never agree to that because that means less money for everyone.
I'm not sure if this is a worth of a breaking news sounder, but Scott, we do have some news coming out of Edmonton. Jason Greger with TSN there is tweeting out that he got confirmation from high-ranking NHL source. Edmonton is not flying to Vancouver today, will not play the Canucks tomorrow. So again, Jason Greger from Edmonton is tweeting out that he got confirmation from high-ranking NHL source that Edmonton is not flying to Vancouver today, will not play the Canucks tomorrow. Scott, once this is confirmed, of course, Elliot Freeman just tweeting out as well, originally scheduled for tomorrow, will be postponed. Not sure yet about the Maple Leafs and Canucks games on Saturday. So it sounds like, Scott, the NHL and whether... whether it was what they heard, Scott, from more players on Zoom yesterday in that meeting with the NHLPA and they went to bat for them, or whether it was JT Miller. Either way, the NHL is doing the right thing here. They're taking the L. They're understanding that we are pushing these players back too soon and they're not going to play the game on Saturday.
They're not taking the L. They're not taking an L. L would have been forcing them to play this game, Karen. This is doing the right thing.
Okay, fair enough.
This is doing the right thing. This is listening to your constituents. This is, guys, I know what we signed off on. I know what the best laid plans were. We can't do this. And if you missed JT Miller's comments yesterday, we'll give you a sampling of them here. All right? JT Miller talked about a lot of different things yesterday, and you will hear in these clips a guy who understands he has a job to do and wants to play the games, but also is realistic about how much time these players have had to prepare and the risks that they would be facing. Here's JT Miller talking about how hard it's going to be to stay healthy.
Kind of frustrating, if I'm being 100% honest with you. And we try to talk about the number one priority is the players' health and their family's safety. And this is, it's almost impossible to achieve that with what they've asked us to do here on our return. So, like I said, I can't speak on behalf of the guys that have had COVID, but I've talked to my teammates a lot. And this hasn't been obviously that easy. There's different for everybody. And you know, for them to try to come back and play, like I just talked to, is going to be very challenging and not very safe, if you're asking me. And I'm sure that there's other people that would agree with that. So I don't know what it's going to take for us to try to avoid injury, stay healthy, whatever it may be. This is going to be a really tough test to try to handle. And I don't know what the right answer is, or I'm just trying to, you know, all I can do is control, I guess, myself from at this point. And if we are, I'm planning on playing Friday. I'm trying to play a good game for my team. So I guess I could focus on that.
I think you can hear him within that clip wrestling with the reality versus the obligation. You hear JT Miller say, look, I know we got a job to do and we got to be ready to go. And he ends it with, I guess I'll just focus on getting ready to go for Friday night. And in between, he talks about the scenario these players are going to have to play in and the landscape of what they're going through. The NHL listened to this. Miller was very strong yesterday. This made waves around the NHL. And yep. Karen Elliott Friedman reported last night, and everybody I think is pretty aware now, that a week ago, the players, the league, the Canucks, everybody signed off on this. But guess what? Things change. And to the league's credit, it used the time it still had to fix this. And we don't know what the schedule is going to look like. We do know Edmonton and Vancouver aren't going to play tomorrow. You and I led the show this morning saying that is the most logical step to take here.
Yeah. I mean, just to move that one game, Scott, we don't know about Saturday. There's a way for the NHL to really very minimally impact the season. There's this three-game set that the Canucks are already playing. Edmonton and Calgary play a day before that. They can move that game. They play a game before that. You can move some games around. Calgary will be affected a little bit, but it's very minimal in terms of what needs to be rescheduled to make this happen. So it's just interesting, Scott, because when the players, when that Saturday it came out and said, okay, they're going to play on the Friday, I wonder if the league thought that players were going to come off the COVID list a little bit faster at the time, and that's why it was agreed upon. And as you saw, it has taken players certain days to come off, and it's been a process. Like yesterday, 9 players came off, and we looked and said, okay, the Canucks can scramble a roster together. They can put 20 players on the ice for a game on Friday. The question is, should they have to put 20 players on the ice on Friday? And JT Miller's, he came out after those 9 players came off the list, and he said, look, like, I'm not speaking for everybody, but I'm kind of relaying thoughts on what is going on right now. Like, this is not okay. We are not ready to go. I am not ready to go, and I didn't even have COVID. Like, I didn't have it, and this is difficult for me to catch my breath. So you look at guys that have been dealing with these symptoms, and you're going to tell them, okay, you get one practice to get up to speed. Just one. Like, I'm sorry. The NHL did the right thing here. Yes, it took JT Miller speaking out. Yes, it took, you know, a Zoom meeting with the PA and other players speaking out, but they did the right thing because the players' health and safety is more than, you know, what a sponsorship of having the game on television tomorrow is going to do for their pocketbooks. It's the right thing to do.
It's best laid plans versus reality. And you can agree to something, and then once you get there and it's different than you thought it was going to be, have a different feeling about that. That's what this is, Karen, and you're right. Mm-hmm. All parties involved would have thought that more players would have come off the COVID list early in the week. I'm guessing JT Miller and many of his teammates thought, okay, once I'm over this, I know it's going to be tough to get up to speed, but I'll probably feel a little better than they ultimately felt once they got on the ice. And some players haven't even had a chance to get on the ice as of yet. It became too much. They relayed their concerns. The PA heard it. The team heard it. The league heard it. And they've amended the plan. We'll wait and see what that plan looks like. You and I, using a little bit of reasoning this morning, said, okay, you don't play the Edmonton game on the Friday. There's a place where you can put that game. You displace the game against the Flames on May 3rd, and now you got to figure out where to put that game in your schedule. But that means you'll have a two-game set against the Oilers in Edmonton, or maybe it's back to Vancouver the other way around, or maybe you play the at Edmonton game on the 3rd and the two games in Vancouver go on the 4th and the 6th. Bottom line is, there's a way to do this and they're going to find a way.
So East Van Tommy texts in, Scott, and you and I have addressed this early in the show. Maybe he didn't hear this. I find it strange, he says, that we haven't heard from Bo Horvat. He's the guy wearing the C on this team. Here's the thing, East Van Tommy. Bo Horvat had COVID, okay? We don't know to what severity either. And he has just come off the COVID list. JT Miller was put out there because he did not have COVID. He had already been skating individually on the ice a couple of times. So they put him out there as kind of the, because he wasn't going to have to answer any questions. Scott, how did you feel? You know, it was more about what's going to happen on the ice versus that. So that's why we haven't heard from Bo Horvat. And you know what? Just because he wears a C doesn't mean he has to be the one to come speak for the team.
Copper Bus sends in this, things change only applies to players, not to the CBA, I guess, LOL. No, that's not true. When people say with the generality, this is something that was collectively bargained, not every situation, not every specific scenario can be planned for. They are general guidelines in the CBA. There is nothing in the CBA that was signed off on. And look, I'll put my hand up if I'm wrong on this, but I've got a pretty good feeling. There is nothing in the CBA that says if there's a COVID outbreak, here's the exact amount of time you get after players come out of COVID that they have to be back on the ice. It's a general guideline. And what was signed off on was we're going to complete a 56-game schedule. But there were allowances built in there. The league has admitted with its actions, Karen, that there was a buffer put onto the back of this season where they could still put games in because we've seen the schedule change. There's an adaptation that needs to occur.
Yeah, and I mean, if it is only one game, I don't think, you know, it's easy to move. We'll see what happens about Saturday. I mean, that's could be up in the air. Of course, Toronto's going to have to get on a plane as well, so we'll see if they have to come to Vancouver. Scott, if I was a betting person, and I kind of have become over the last little while, I'd probably bet that that game on Saturday is going to play.
Yes,
I think that they're going to give them that one extra day. And see who comes off the list today. Also, just remember, like, a lot of these players had to go through physicals to get off the COVID list. Like, you're going through cardiac testing as well. You're going through lung capacity. Like, you have to see how this virus affected you. And you know what? One game to try and find their legs, too, or one practice? At least give them a couple days skating to try and find their legs.
Which is what they're going to do, and I agree with you that Toronto, Vancouver, Saturday afternoon in Vancouver will be played. I think that's how it's going to go. You're doubling the practice time. It's still not a lot of time to ramp up, but here's the other thing that it provides. It provides a day off in between games, which is something that this original schedule did not. So it will be Toronto on Saturday, day off maybe, or resume some skating to try to generate those legs back for some of these players. Another game on Monday. And yes, you're going to be thrown into the throes of this difficult schedule that other teams have had to combat. The Canucks are not the only team that has had this frequency of games in a 31-32 day stretch, but they are the only team that has had this big of an outbreak and this long of a break. So they need a little bit more time than some of these others to get a reasonable facsimile of the team up and running.
And Scott, we can also point to what these teams look like when they came back from these big breaks. Look at New Jersey. I think they're the team that probably had the most amount of players, Scott, contract COVID. I believe they had 13 players, something like that. So when they came back, their entire season was derailed as well. I mean, I think they won a couple of games in there, but they were on a losing streak when they started their season, when they came back. And, I mean, look at the roster they mismatched, pushed together. Like, it wasn't a good one. You could point to Buffalo. Yeah, you know, like, there's a couple wins in there, but I could probably tell you, you can make a good point that that 18-game losing streak, a lot of that had to do with how the players were feeling coming back after COVID. So there is a precedent to see that these players, it takes a while for them to ramp it back up. And I think the point being made is, Scott, it's not that they're asking the players to play 19 games in 31 days. It's the lead up to get them ready for 19 games in 31 days. That's what needs to be wrapped around. It's not, he's not complaining about the amount of games. They understood it was a compressed schedule. Yeah, it sucks. They're not in a playoff race, really, so it sucks. But at the same point, too, it's like you just want to put yourself in the best position to not injure yourself further, possibly, going into those games.
There's a couple parts of this conversation I think most of us can relate to. One of them is, look, there are circumstances in which you don't feel it's suitable to work. I think that's one part of it. The other is this. We all feel this obligation. And you tell me from your point of view out there at 960, 960 or 650, 650, what that is to you. Like, Karen, I feel it. You feel it. I think my feelings on it have changed over this past year, which I'll get to in a second. But you feel an obligation to your teammates, your coworkers, in the case of sports, your literal teammates, to be there for them, to put on the uniform, to get out there. What is that obligation? Because we've all been in situations where we didn't think we were put in a very good spot and that the day is going to be tough at work or the week or the month, whatever it is, and most of us have done it anyway. Is that an obligation to finances? Is that loyalty to the company and the people you work with? Is it just a team-first mentality? What is it?
I think it's a combination of all of those. I think when it looks like the team, when you're looking, say, specifically at hockey, I would say it's the team-first mentality because that's what hockey players are. You know, it's not about the name on the back. It's about what's the crest on the chest, Scott. And you're going to go out there and play for everybody that has that same crest as you. And it's just, it's been, you know, you see it throughout the years. It's just a hockey thing. Finances, I don't think, I mean, maybe in the everyday working world, that's for some people, Scott, because you got to put food on the table. But I think there's just a loyalty to your compadres. Like, if I was to wake up tomorrow morning and feel a tickle in my throat and, you know, whatever the case may be, and it's one thing because we're in COVID, but I don't want to bring that to the workplace and possibly give that to you. But I would feel bad about not showing up that day because I'm leaving you on the lurch, right?
Yes, and that's how my perspective has changed over this year, Karen, because I used to be, you know what? It's worse to leave my teammate, you in this case, in the lurch than it is to show up with a tickle in my throat, if, as you're referring to it there. I've changed my view on that entirely with what we've gone through in the last year, that it's actually me letting my teammates down by showing up, potentially getting them sick. But I think a lot of us have been brought up in that mentality, that you go out there, you get through it, and it's more important to be there for your teammates in that moment, even at less than 100%, than it is to maybe put them at risk, which is the way I view it now. We've got some really good texts coming in on this. Han says, our collective response to COVID has been evolving based on new discoveries and learnings. That's science. Whatever agreement was signed nearly a year ago needs to be updated. Did we ever confirm if it was the P1 variant that hit the Canucks? We did not confirm it was the P1 variant. We confirmed it was a variant.
It is a variant, yes. I don't think they confirmed it's the P1. Of course, there's a UK variant that's out there as well, Scott. This comes in from Randy McDonald in Calgary. The pandemic has taught us something very valuable, that wellness is paramount in our society. The effects of the outbreak the Canucks have experienced might not be known for months or years. We keep hearing comments like, quote, moving the goalposts every time and every time a pivot is made. But this is biology, not a game. Give the Canucks more time. And I think that's the point. It's like, Scott, you said it. Things change. What was a determining factor to come back in the bubble, Scott, maybe it's not the same now. You know, like, things have changed. If they signed off to play this 56-game schedule, I understand that. But I don't think they signed off for 20-some-odd members of their team to get COVID. You know, and they did. They just happened to.
Dan Murphy on Twitter has tweeted out, at this point, he wouldn't be surprised if the Canucks' next two games are Sunday and Monday. The extra 2 days would make a big difference to a lot of players. Have to wait and see, though. I could see it going that way, too. Like, that's not unreasonable. If you say, I'll take the day on the early side as opposed to in between games, yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And my prediction was they play Saturday and Monday. You agreed with that? But, like, if they move the Saturday game against the Leafs to Sunday, yeah, okay, that's feasible to me, too. I think they're playing the two Toronto games. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think they are, too. This text comes in. It says, one day is not more time. This is ridiculous. I think the point is at least they're going to get a couple of days, Scott, to get their legs underneath them and feel and maybe determine who's good to go and who's not good to go. That just gives them one extra day. I know it's not a lot. It really isn't in the grand scheme of things. But I think for these players, it just gets them a couple more, one more skating day to find their legs or just see where their legs are at.
And I will go back to what I said yesterday, which I stand by, which I feel validated by what JT Miller said yesterday, even though I didn't think he was going to say it. If the players are okay with one extra day, or in Murph's scenario, two extra days being enough time to get them to a reasonable place to play these games, then that's enough time. It's not on me. It's not on you. It's not on our texter to say, well, they need a week to get up to speed. That would be great. That would be awesome. They don't have that luxury right now. So what is the amount of time that they feel comfortable with? And I think that's what all of us can demand as workers. Okay, what's a reasonable situation I can be put in from a health and safety standpoint? There are going to be days that are tougher than others. And I know it's not always health and safety that affect our workplaces, Karen. It can be other circumstances that make it a more stressful time, or being shorthanded, having to work through it, whatever your job place happens to be. What are you willing to work through? What aren't you? And this is really what's at the heart of what JT Miller said yesterday and what the Canucks in the league are trying to accommodate right now.
This text comes in, for fairness, could you see them eliminating one game against each of the Canadian teams? No, I cannot see that. I could see them basically, they're just going to move this game, Scott. I mean, that's basically what they're going to do. We have said it multiple times on this show. There is a pretty easy way for them to figure out how to fit this game against Edmonton. And again, Edmonton may need this game, Scott, in terms of where they are in the standings, because they're in a fight for a playoff position. So they're going to want to play this game down the road. Again, they can move a Calgary against Vancouver game to later on this season, and maybe they don't play all these games because they just don't matter in the standings, and we could have them, you know, go by points percentage when it comes to the draft lottery. But no, I don't see them eliminating one game against each of the Canadian teams.
Well, they can't. They've already played their entire series against the Montreal Canadiens, for example.
So
that's one thing. They still have those Calgary games at the end of the year that might mean something. They might not. Yeah, they mean something no matter what to a lottery standpoint if they both happen to be in that race instead of a playoff one at that point in time. But we're talking small potatoes in the grander scheme. We really are. Like, if, and I used this before, and I know what Friedman said in the podcast about teams at the bottom of the standings worrying a little bit about lottery odds being affected by games not played. They didn't make those seven teams that weren't involved in the qualifying tournament last year go play games to set a lottery odds last season, Karen.
No, they didn't. But, yeah, you know what? I'm curious to see what they're going to do about the Saturday game. I could see them moving that, Scott, just like Murph said, too, and maybe playing back-to-backs against Toronto. It'll be interesting to see, but I at least I'm happy in the fact that maybe in the grand scheme of things, one day is really not enough, but at least they listened to them and they said, okay, we're going to at least put one more day in front of you. I mean, I can argue both ways on this. I'm just happy at least for one, at least one day, the NHL and the PA listened to the grumblings and, you know, legitimate grumblings from the Canucks.
You can get in on this conversation at any time, 960-960 or 650-650. We'll see what ramifications this has on the rest of the schedule. I think there's a logical way to do that that will actually affect Calgary's schedule as well. We can outline that for you. And yes, I will get to the thing that amused me to no end last night in Daryl Sutter's press conference, and he didn't say a word. At least not that I'm going to play for you. I'll explain next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
One final segment on Rintoul and Sermon. Thank you very much for joining us here today. If you missed the news, if you're just joining us, the Canucks-Oilers game for tomorrow night, that has been postponed. We don't know exactly when it's going to be rescheduled. Wait and see. We don't know exactly what's happening with the weekend games. I think both are still going to remain on the Canucks schedule, whether it's Sunday, Monday against the Leafs or Saturday, Monday against the Leafs. Primetime game, Hockey Night in Canada. I know it's not everything, but it's something that will factor into the discussion, Karen. Whether they give the Canucks an extra couple of days to practice, skate, get their legs under them before they face the Leafs twice, we'll see. Maybe they take the day off in between. Likely it is one of those two scenarios.
Yeah, and we have seen precedent so far this season, Scott. There was a Hockey Night in Canada game that was postponed this season. I believe it was the late game between, I think, Vancouver and Edmonton at the time. Don't quote me on that, but there was a late game. So there is precedent that if a game needs to be moved or postponed, it has to happen. But, you know, I knew we were going to get these in, Scott. I just knew. It's Toronto, right? Can't see them moving the Saturday game. It's Toronto on prime time, not to mention another way to gift Toronto some points by the league. That is unsigned text. I just knew that was going to come in. Like, the Leafs bias of, well, they're going to make everything so that Toronto can do well.
If you actually look at what has happened to teams coming out of this, there's, in many cases, an initial surge of energy and potentially winning, like in the case of the Dallas Stars,
Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. And then the schedule starts to set in and everything catches up with you, because you can't have that same enthusiasm, that same energy that you might have. So you can actually argue this sets up better for the Canucks to challenge the Toronto Maple Leafs in that first game than it would have had they played back-to-back games against Edmonton and Toronto Friday, Saturday, as originally scheduled. This one comes in. Compressing the schedule just makes the travel more ridiculous. Look at it as it stands right now, says this texter. May 4th, away to Edmonton. May 6th, home to Edmonton. May 8th, away to Edmonton. The NHL must realize there is no gate revenue. WTF. As it stands right now, we can't take it at face value, is my response. We don't know how they're going to reschedule and shuffle things around. We just don't. They're doing this on the fly. We will wait.
So that looks ridiculous, Scott, but let's hypothesize here. If they move the game against Edmonton to May 3rd, which means they move the game against Calgary to the end of the season so they can play, you know, three games in a row at the end of the season, there is a scenario when you look at it, Scott, they could change the dates that are home and away. You could play two home, two away to limit the flights. So there is a scenario where that travel does not maybe affect as much. So temper the expectations here. I mean, it sucks in general. I mean, they're going to play now 19 games, and I don't even know how many games. I guess 31 still. They're going to have to probably do that, just move it down the road. But there is a scenario that works out where they can limit travel as well.
There is. And I would just have you look at recent history. At this time yesterday, we thought the Vancouver Canucks were going to play Edmonton on Friday. That has since changed. Other things about this schedule may change. Instead of projecting exactly what they're going to do, hey, we can hypothesize, but there's no point getting bent out of shape about something that has not yet happened as of yet. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. Your comments, agree, disagree?
Okay.
You can always send them in to 960, 960, or 650, 650.
Scotty, can we get to this? Because you've been teasing it all show. And it's something that you texted late last night, and I actually didn't see it till this morning because I think I went to bed at like 9:15 last night. But anyways, I digressed. You said this, and you said, "Okay, you guys, go to the 3-minute mark. You have to watch this." You sent it to Jamie, our producer, and myself. You say, "You got to watch this. Like, what is Daryl Sutter doing? I don't care what he is saying. I could care less that he's talking about, you know, how his team has lost confidence or they have confidence. Whatever he's saying, look at what he's doing."
Well, I was listening until that point, and then I couldn't take my eyes off what he was doing. And Jamie may want to weigh in on this conversation as well. So Sutter's sitting at, we'll call it the podium last night. He's doing his Zoom conference, and he's got like a Pellegrino sparkling water in front of him there. It's got the cap. And about 3 minutes into his press conference, he's got the cap off, and that little ring that goes around the base of a cap that you screw onto a bottle, he's tearing that off while he's answering questions and listening to questions, which in itself is no big deal. But then while he's answering his next question, he starts picking pieces of it off, and one piece he flicks across the table. Then he starts tying what's remaining of the ring into a knot. I'm not sure what he's going to do with it next. Like, I watched for 2 minutes just trying to figure out exactly what he was going to do. And you had a good analogy, and people can relate to this one.
It's like someone sits at a bar who sits there, you know, you've got your coaster that's made out of whatever, paper, and you're like sitting there and you're just picking it apart, and all of a sudden by the end of it, Scott, you've got about 100 little pieces in front of you, and you've made a mess, and you don't know what to do with it because this is, you know, you're just bored and you're doing it. It seemed like he was just a bored guy at the podium, and he's just going to pick at this ring because he doesn't want to be there answering questions. It's just, it seems like something bizarre to do while trying to answer post-game questions.
Well, what's interesting about it to me is he's doing this, and obviously he's paying some attention to what he's doing with his hands, or maybe it's just a habit that he has when he has a cap like that, and he's going through this. And yet he's still giving, like, thoughtful answers while he's flicking a piece of this ring across the table and tying the other part of it into a knot. I just didn't know where it was going to go next. Like, in one sense, like, his actions, like, his actual movements could not be more indicative of, what am I even doing here? Like, this is something I should be doing. And yet his answers, there was something to him.
You know what? If it wasn't Daryl Sutter, I would have loved for the media to ask him, like, hey, Daryl, what are you doing with your with the ring of your cap right now, eh? Like something like that. He probably wouldn't be too impressed with it. And, you know, maybe he would laugh. Maybe he goes, oh, this is what I was doing. I didn't even know I was doing this. But, yeah, it was pretty epic to see Daryl Sutter sitting there just playing with the ring of a lid.
Notes and quotes. We do it at this time every day. If you want in, get in. 650, 650, or 960, 960. Sutter pretty happy last night, though he doesn't always come in beaming to his post-game Zoom. His team won, third consecutive win. Certainly makes tomorrow night's game against the Flames feel a little bit bigger. I'm not going to say a lot bigger yet. Calgary wins tomorrow. It's going to feel a lot different when those two teams meet for their final three games in about a week's time. Leafs and Jets will go tonight. Jets won last night. Nice goal. Nice goal by Trevor Lewis to win things for the Winnipeg Jets. They get contributions up and down that line.
Right? Man,
the pass from Nick Ehlers to Scheifele last night for that goal was sensational. Those two have been great all year long. A number of notes coming in about this game. Some people wondering what's going on with the Leafs goaltending situation, Karen.
Yeah, and Sheldon Keefe talked about this today because, you know, there is what's going on with Freddie Anderson. And he was actually spotted on the ice by the media today. There is visual evidence, Scott, that Freddie Anderson is still alive and well. And he was out there on the ice taking some shots before practice. I think he hasn't been seen since the middle of March or late March. Good news is, Scott, for Leafs fans out there, he is slated to travel on this five-game road trip. Sheldon Keefe would not talk about the fact, you know, whether he's going to play. They're keeping that very tight to the chest. But I think it is good news to know that he is going to go out there on this five-game trip and maybe get some morning skates in with the team. I guess maybe down the road he might see some game action. He also talked about today, Sheldon Keefe, he talked about the fact that this is Jack Campbell's first time since being a Maple Leaf where he has to try and bounce back from a loss.
I mean, I think he's fine. You know, I think this is all part of it. I mean, there's a reason, you know, the reason why he was getting the attention he was with, you know, setting the record and the run that he was on, because it's not normal. That's not how it goes. You got to be able to deal with these situations. That's all part of the process. And I really don't think it's an issue. Obviously, we've come to know Jack to be one that, you know, where accepts the blame and puts things on himself. But, you know, part of him playing more is, you know, he's got to find a, you know, he's got to be even keel and brush things off. And I certainly believe that he will and that he has.
I took that as the good teammate line of answering after the game the other night. He finally loses. If you watch that game, that wasn't on Jack Campbell. Like, he might not have had his best game that he's had during this streak of 12 starts, but that game wasn't on. And there's some bad turnovers by the Leafs. They had opportunities to win these games. That game that he ultimately loses, he wasn't at his best, but it's not like the loss that the Jets suffered on the weekend where Connor Hellebuyck, like, literally gifted two goals to the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest loss, though, Scott, might be for the fact that Austin Matthews is not playing in this game. He is out day-to-day, no word on what it is, but Sheldon Keefe said that it's something that won't keep him out very long. So if you're a Leafs fan, I'm sure there's a lot of them out there listening to us right now. They're, you know, worried, but don't be too worried about Auston Matthews. Also, William Nylander could be back soon, too.
So yep. Are you suggesting that this might be game management, that Auston Matthews could play, Karen, but there is some sort of ailment that's preventing him from playing, and so they're going to do what they think is best for their team and get him back to better health? In the National Hockey League, this could happen?
I thought they didn't do that in hockey. Good thing there's no paying fans out there, Scott, that are worried about getting their money's worth for their ticket. William Nylander is eligible for release from the NHL's COVID protocol as well. He just needs one more negative test, so he could skate with the Leafs tomorrow, I guess, before they fly out to maybe Vancouver to play on Saturday. So one player's out, one player could be coming back, and, you know, there. That's all you need to know about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And before you send the angry texts and tweets, we're just joking. We understand. Look, we are sports fans as well. We buy tickets as well, and when we buy them, we want to see the best. We just understand that that is not always possible, and it's not a blight on the game if it happens every once in a while. That's the only CanCon going on tonight. Jets and Leafs, couple games last night. Daryl Sutter, this is a guy who's waiting for tomorrow, hoping to see what would be a team-high four-game winning streak under his reign since arriving. This is his second three-game winning streak. He was asked yesterday about whether or not the team is adapting to the style that he has employed.
I think that they are, Derek, to be quite honest, working at it really hard to try and do it. I think, though, that even today, you know, we do a classroom style with them to reinforce some of the areas that where they have to get better at. It should come naturally for them. They have to be able to they can't read it out of the book when they're out on the ice. It's not getting called in from the box upstairs. They have to be able to react quicker and better, and that's something that takes time. It's not, you know, we just had to reinforce it again. We played 3 and 4 days, and we're reinforcing it again, which is what you have to do. That's part of being a staff that's recognizing what's going on and the players responding to it, and they've done a good job of that.
Scotty, and when I wanted to ask you this too, because I mean, you've watched the Flames the entire season up until now, and of course since Daryl Sutter's come on, when you look at like the style of hockey they're playing right now, this low event hockey, but you know, they're not giving up much. Like Daryl says, it's going to take time, but are you seeing them adapt to the type of style that he wants them to play?
Yes, absolutely. And it hasn't come easy. And I do think what he described there is more applicable to all sports, Karen, than it is just to what Calgary's going through right now. When you are asked to change on the fly what you're doing and you don't have a lot of practice time, that's something that Sutter referenced yesterday. Jacob Markstrom brought this up as well yesterday, that part of the reason he feels like he's settling into a groove right now is because he had some practice time to work on his game. They've been able to drill this in. You know the difference between going out there and thinking about what you're supposed to do and just playing and reacting. And that's what Sutter's getting at. Once it becomes a little more natural, what you're being asked to do, and you don't have to think, oh, where am I supposed to be? Am I the F1, F2 in on the forecheck? Who am I supposed to be? If I'm not there, where am I supposed to go? And you're used to it. Now you can just react and you can adapt to situational hockey.
Here's what I know. I know that the Calgary Flames are winning right now. They're not doing what they did in the past, Scott, and that was when they face adversity, they go away. They're fighting in games. They're winning games. And someone just called me out on our text message inbox for being an Oilers fan. I am an Oilers fan. Yes, I am on Calgary Vancouver Radio, but I will tell this. You can put it out there into the universe. I want the Calgary Flames to go on a run. I do. I want to see them do well. I want to see them push Montreal for a playoff spot. I also think Montreal will give Toronto a good run in the playoffs. I also think Calgary would give Toronto a very good run in the playoffs.
Do we get to do a rescind the L segment if Calgary somehow bounces back and my original prediction is right, even though I took an L on the Flames last week? Like, do we get to do a rescind the L?
Yeah, no, because, well, okay.
Is it like a pardon?
We'll have to get the judge to give that to you. Jamie can give that to you. Maybe we'll let him determine that one. But it's funny, Scott, because you did say, okay, I'm going to keep waiting a week. I'm going to keep waiting a week. And then you're like, okay, this is the week that, you know, I'm going to take the L on Calgary. Maybe you motivated them. Maybe they were listening. They're like,
pretty sure.
You know what?
pretty sure that's what it is. I'm surprised we actually got that clip in. Greg's so focused on jean jackets back at Mission Control. I do know this. You should not expect to see Vasily Podkolzin in the NHL this year.
Nope.
It's looking more and more remote. The Canucks first rounder from a couple years ago, he's been named to Russia's senior men's team for an international event at the end of this month, which is likely a precursor to him playing for Russia at the World Championships. That roster isn't set as of yet, but it is a likely precursor to that. So there's a couple good things that come with it. Look, I know Canucks fans wanted to see their first rounder play Karen, but it also means you're not burning the ELC year. Also means you're not throwing him into what is kind of chaos unfolding for the Vancouver Canucks at the end of the year as far as the schedule is concerned.
Here's the thing. I mean, you're going to be throwing the kid into an NHL situation, a situation he's not been in before. You know what? Give him the summer to get ready for it, or the off season, I guess. Not the summer, but the off season. Just let him go play for Russia at the Worlds. He's probably going to do that. Just keep him away, kind of, Scott, from what is going on right now. Like, this is a situation. If this was a normal year and the Canucks were out of the playoff spot race in a normal season, yeah, bring him over. Maybe give the fans some... a bright spot to look forward to, see what he can do. But in a situation like this, like, keep him away from this. This is a situation that you don't need to bring this young 19-year-old kid into. It's not necessary.
Eight other games in the National Hockey League tonight. We mentioned the Jets and the Leafs. They'll play the only Canadian division matchup. Eight other games, and there's a bunch of good ones. Islanders-Bruins. Islanders have dominated this matchup for the most part all season long. It's tune-up time for the Bruins, who have more to play for. They don't have as much breathing room in trying to clinch a playoff spot in this division than the Islanders do. These are two teams who bid for Taylor Hall. One team was rejected by Kevin Adams. Bad rejection because you got less. The Bruins ended up getting him as he goes looking for his first point tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, did you mention this off the top? Sorry, I was reading the inbox. But Tuukka Rask is going to be back in net. Yes, so they've been going with some rookies in net, and we talked to, I believe, Matt Porter earlier this week, and he had said, you know, this has been a big issue a bit with the Boston Bruins. Like, it's not just they can't score, but it goes all the way down through their lineup, and they've been having to play with rookie goaltenders, so they're going to get a veteran lineup. And I believe Brad Marchand said in his media availability, he just gives us that little more confidence out there. So Tuukka Rask is back for Boston tonight.
Predators Hurricanes is another very good game tonight. We talked yesterday about the Preds. They've won 13 of their last 16 games. Hurricanes at the top of the division. This is a potential first-round matchup in the Central.
And Nashville's 0-4 against Carolina this season, too. Like, that's one of the only team within the division that they have not been able to beat. I'm curious to see this, Scott. This is a bit of a litmus test for Nashville. Like, Carolina's first right now. If you are legitimately on this hot streak, let's see it. I want to see. So this is a bit of a measuring stick for them.
Another potential first-round preview, Panthers and Lightning, all Florida battle tonight. No Steven Stamkos. John Cooper saying he's not going to play this weekend either.
No.
We'll wait and see. That was such a weird one. He's just all of a sudden dumping the puck in. You wondered what happened. They didn't really diagnose what's wrong with Steven Stamkos, a guy who's had lots of injuries over the course of the last number of years. You hope for him and for the Lightning that he's better soon.
Well, and someone, because of Scott, his injury history, you're going to take the most amount of time allowable to you to try and get him better. And again, we don't know what it is. It was such a weird thing. Like, I go back and watch it over and over and over again, Scott, and I still have no idea what he tweaked. Obviously, something didn't feel right, and he hasn't played since then. This will be one, you know, if you've got that Rogers Game Center out there, go there, flip to this game, because these are two pretty fun teams. And again, like, kind of... look at this Florida team. I mean, get used to these players on this team. Because, again, you look at their roster, Scott, sometimes you go, yeah, they got Sasha Barkov. Yeah, they got Jonathan Huberdeau. But now they have Sam Bennett. So we'll see how he does out there. But it's one of those things where it's like, you look at that roster, and you're like, and who? But it's a very fun team to watch. So if you have the Rogers Game Pass, I suggest going to watch that game tonight.
Carter Verhaeghe having a great year.
He's hurt, though.
He is. He's having a great year, though. Like, he came over from Tampa Bay, very low-cost acquisition, and boy, has he delivered on it this year. Flyers-Penguins also on the docket. Less juice to that one, given the way Philly's gone, but it's an in-state rivalry game, so there's always something that could come out of the Battle of Pennsylvania.
Is Jeff Carter, would this be his first game in a Pittsburgh uniform as well? Do we know if he's playing?
Good question. I have not seen whether or not Carter is playing in this game. I don't know exactly what the protocol is in the state of Pennsylvania with incoming players. I don't know how many days of quarantine Jeff Carter will have to go through, if any at all, but it is at least a possibility. It's Notes and Quotes. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Thanks for all of your interaction today. It's been great. 960, 960, 650, 650. Karen, get out there. Enjoy the sun. Wear sunscreen if necessary.
I've learned from yesterday, Scott, that I will not be getting burned in April sunshine.
I cannot always say the same, which is why I told one listener earlier on the text message inbox, yes, when the hot weather comes, I basically put sunscreen in my shower head for my morning routine. That's how it goes. Big ups to Jamie Dodd and, yeah, even for his jean jacket take. Greg Ballack, big ups to you back at Mission Control. We're all back. Final show of the week tomorrow. No Canucks game tomorrow all of a sudden. There is a notable game in Montreal that we'll be talking about and everything else that is happening as we play you into the weekend. Have yourselves a great day. Big show coming up in Calgary. Bick and the Boss in Vancouver. Enjoy that sunshine when you get a chance, folks.